Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, August 8th, 2013. Massive amount of material to try and cover tonight. Some dealing with recent announcements that there's a solar condition. There's a lot of false information about so-called kill shots from the sun. I want to clarify that, just conditions about the sun, the magnetic reversal, misinformation, some people quoting NASA, and anyway, it's just a massive amount of misinformation. The end result is I personally think there will be, first of all, let me state that the sun has never been in a lower probable state of having a kill shot as it is today. There's all kinds of people claiming secret information about planets that are in the solar system or dwarfs of various types. And all of this secret information stuff or private contact, okay, it doesn't amount to a hill of beans if people cannot have independent verification of some type. Here it is, you know, you have to give the orbit, you have to tell where it is so other people can look and verify this. So I don't partake in any of that. A lot of people have been trying to get me to say things like this, and no, I don't. You know, I don't make predictions based on... I get information all the time, people asking me questions, did you hear about this? It's very simple. If somebody has real information, it has to be presented in a scientifically verifiable manner, not some secret buddy of mine that's high in government says that Planet X is here. No, that's ridiculous. Doesn't mean anything. How many times have I heard that over my career? I was dealing with Planet X type objects before the term Planet X ever became popular. So anyway, I'll be talking about some of that. August 6th, we were blanketed with electrical activity across the United States and much of the world. I'll be talking about that. And let me first review something from last week's show. Last week's show I consider a must listen. If you didn't listen to last week's show, your assignment after listening to this show is to go back to the archives on my webpage, listen to the August 1st, 2013 radio show. I give President Dwight D. Eisenhower's final address to the nation, his parting address, and he talks there about the dangers, the upcoming dangers to the country. He stresses the military-industrial complex, but then he goes into a long, detailed oration about science, government-promoted science, government monopoly science, and of course included in that is corporate science, and the dangers of the scientists working in organized groups that are top-down funded. Basically, that's what he says that specifically, because the research is so costly and it's expensive. It includes a government grant, government funding. And so he's talking about the dangers of that. But then let me stress something on this show. Now that you've listened to that show, if you haven't, go back and listen to it. But he says, here's what he says. Eisenhower, after talking at length about the great danger of sponsored or corporate government science without bounds, says the only, now this is the important part, the only prevention is an ever watchful and knowledgeable public. Now, gee, do you think that the bankers that want to control you and everything you do, the Obama taking over climate control and putting in a huge policy for climate control, all to help you, do you think that this is really meant to help you? No, this is top-down control, and those bankers know You know, now I'm not talking about the guy down to your local savings and loan that gives you a loan. I'm talking about the people you never hear their names. They're related to the European bankers that own our Federal Reserve banking system in the United States and loan money to all the countries in the world, fictitious fiat money that has no backing. I'm talking about the English bank, which is a part of the European Rothschilds banking system, in our own country, the Federal Reserve in Canada, the Royal Bank of Canada. These companies that are the bankers know how to manipulate public thought. And, of course, the current issue that they're working on worldwide is the control of water. That's why climate change is so important, because it allows them control mechanisms. In Obama, I'll be talking about his policies where he says this is too important for Congress to handle. This is too important for bipartisan politics. So he's just taking it over and doing whatever he wants to do by presidential executive orders. So at any rate, here is Eisenhower back in 1961, January of 1961, days before he hands off the torch of the presidency to Kennedy, and he is stating on national television the danger of sponsored science, scientists working. And I'll tell you, I cannot stomach government-sponsored scientists. They make me puke. I can't put it any other way, because they are so bought, so paid for, and so stupid. Now, the ones that you see at the international meetings, the ones that publish in the respectable journals, those are the ones that were left behind. And let me explain that. These are the guys that present the facade of top-level science. These are the guys that do it for a paycheck. And these are the guys that are too stupid to understand that they are where they are because they are stupid. They are not the ones that got plucked out to be put into the upper echelon tier one science. These are the guys that were left behind to wallow in their mire, so to speak, and don't know it. These are the guys that present the facade of top-level science. And they are a huge danger because that is who the news media goes to for information. This is by design. This is by design because they will continue doing this as long as they get a paycheck. And let's face it, there ain't nothing else these guys or women can do. Nothing. Can you imagine them? One of them going into McDonald's and trying to sign up for managing a McDonald's hamburger stand? Let me see, sir, what are your qualifications? Well, I was a NASA scientist. I worked at Goddard Space Flight Center for 23 years. And, what are they going to do to get a job doing anything? So, because they really don't know anything. And what they do think they know is incorrect. So, the bottom line here is Eisenhower's statement. There are two words he uses, and I want to stress these. He has an ever-watchful public. That means the public is not playing video games. They're not sitting there in the evening watching the boob tube or listening to the radio or looking at internet science that is totally incorrect. They are watchful and they're knowledgeable. That means that they understand science, not the garbage science that's pawned off from the tier two controlled science government centers that are there to purposefully present misinformation. Now, do these scientists know this? No, they don't. They're clueless. They're clueless about everything. You watch them schlocking around in international science meeting. They know where the food table is. They hit that every breakfast, dinner, and supper. They know where the event is. They can wander around that. They can wander around the various sessions and sit down and listen, just like they've been sitting and listening since they were in kindergarten. You know, these are the guys that left their brain somewhere on the shelf someplace long ago. Okay, so this is what Eisenhower was warning against. Then you have the Tier 1 scientists who are bought and paid for and cannot do anything. They are the people that are basically under gag orders, compartmentalized so that they do their own little piece of science, and they have security clearances, and they cannot talk at all. Nobody knows who they are, what they do, and we are in a huge mess because of these scientists. And they are very much owned, bought, and paid for. And a good example is these, I was on, John Moore's show a week ago, and I was talking about the scientists who provide information about water and the world water reserves, the freshwater reserves of the world. This information does not go to you. It goes up the ladder to the bankers. How did George Bush Jr. know to go down to Central or South America in central area of Paraguay and purchase 100,000 acres on top of the world's largest water resources, aquifer? How did he know that? Well, this came from scientists. George Bush Jr. doesn't have enough brains to barbecue a hamburger. Well, he probably does a pretty good hamburger. You know, as far as water in South America, he doesn't know anything. This information had to come to these people from scientists out in the field, making measurements, taking data, satellite data, ground data, other types of data, and putting it together and then feeding it up the ladder to these people who then can go out, purchase land, using money from their oil energy gains, and therefore control water. And this is not just an individual doing this. This is part of a worldwide banking consortium that in the Bushes, once they graduated from being president, just like Clinton, just like Obama will do, just like Jimmy Carter is doing things for, you know, and then you've got the guy like Al Gore, who is still pumping global warming and water control out of the end result of global warming. Now they're saying, oh, the Earth is going to cool, and there's a big debate on that. You see how this stalls progress. The real demand should be, we don't need 40-hour work weeks with everybody driving their SUV up and down the road, paying interest on loans for that SUV and paying exorbitant interest rates through amortization tables on their house loan. You don't have a 3% loan, folks. Don't ever tell me you have a 3 or a 4% loan. You are a moron if you think this. You have a 95% loan because of a little thing that you don't know about, apparently, called an amortization schedule. It's a table that says when your first payment on your loan comes in, about 98% of your money goes to interest. Okay, the average person doesn't own a home in the United States more than 5 years. So you are paying a 95 to 98% loan. Don't ever tell me that you have a 3% loan, because you don't. You have a 98% loan. You are being conned and sharked, okay? And you're driving to work every day to pay for that. Do you get the picture? If not, well, okay, I'm going to get off that bandwagon, but Eisenhower warned against this. He said, an ever-watchful and knowledgeable public. We do not have a watchful, ever-watchful, or we certainly don't have a knowledgeable, scientifically knowledgeable public in this country. Molding the public in this country is easier than taking a piece of oil-based clay and molding it into anything they want. Okay, So enough of that. I'm going to go on to some scientific issues. First, here I want to give a report on the solar conditions. The sun has been extremely calm. There were a couple mini flares, or kind of average flares, that flew out the other side of the sun this past week. But other than that, the sun is flat line, nothing, zero. But it's an interesting situation because let me go back to August 6th. Now, this is the 8th, so we're talking about Tuesday. The United States had an extremely powerful weather system move through, and through Wisconsin, it leveled the place. Plus it was an extreme electrical storm. Also on Wednesday, Oklahoma had storm systems with recorded sprites. People recorded the sprites. These are electrical extensions above the cloud systems, above the thunder storm, the cloud systems that are manifested in the thunderstorm. The sprites are electrical lightning, basically shooting up, or they're above the thunder clouds. Now, I looked at spaceweather.com. I always check that out before my show just to see what ridiculous type of things they're posting there. And they have a scientist, a physicist, who studies apparently auroras and has taken some pictures of sprites in Oklahoma on August 6th. And he says, you can now even determine the lightning bolts that caused the sprites. And I'm just hitting myself on my forehead, imagining, here again, this is tier 2 science. He's saying that the lightning bolt that's down below the cloud causes the sprite, which is basically electrical discharge above the clouds, that the lightning below causes the sprite above. And I'm thinking, how can these people be PhDs in atmospheric science and in physics and be so rock stupid that somehow the lightning bolt down here causes the lightning bolt up there, shooting out of the same cloud but on opposite ends? Boys and girls, this is 101 physics, that the clouds do not create the lightning that shoots out both ends. How absurd, or that the lightning on the bottom creates the lightning on the top. That's about as ridiculous as El Nino, a warmth condition out in the Pacific, affecting hurricanes in the Atlantic. I really, I haven't heard that myth in quite a while. Maybe they've dropped that one. But at any rate, let me talk a little bit about these storm systems on August 6th in Wisconsin. I got some various reports and some very good ones of people who actually were in this. And there again, I didn't see this reported. I didn't see reported the damage that was done in Wisconsin. This is from personal reports that came to me from listeners, that a lot of damage to the countryside in Wisconsin, broad areas where, for example, one woman told me all the barns had been blown down in a particular area. I think it was called Fremont or Freedom in Wisconsin. It's about maybe a half an hour or so south of Green Bay, Wisconsin. That was one report. Another one, south in Madison, the electrical systems went out. And all over Wisconsin, the electrical systems went out. So it was a tremendously electrical storm. I heard from many people that the electricity was, and this is in the middle of the night, mind you, which is another strange thing. If sunlight is supposedly what causes these immense storms, how do they build and grow on the dark side of the Earth. Well, of course, it's all electrical. These are connected to the electrical solar system that we live in. Now, let me explain. I'm going to just go 90 degrees here off topic for a minute. When I learned that August 6th was an event, what we will call a national event in the United States with high amounts of electricity, of electrical activity all across the Midwest of the United States, I looked for reasons. I looked for causes. Comet Isen is on the far side of the solar system. It's not doing anything relative to us at this time. The far planets, Uranus, Neptune, are nowhere aligned with us at all. Jupiter is on the far side of the solar system. Mercury is 90 degrees off the right side of the sun, the morning sky, and Venus is in the night sky, very high up in the night sky. So it's a good 90 degrees, but almost 90 degrees off on the other side of the sun. There is nothing that really could trigger this storm system. The moon, August 6th, was in new moon phase. It was actually blocking the solar wind on the sunward side. And, of course, the storm systems that we're talking about occurred at night, in the middle of the night. So that electrical activity was coming in from the far side of Earth. From the far side of Earth, that part of the solar system. So where on Earth did this electrical activity come from? And so the sun by itself is very weak. The solar wind conditions are extremely stable in the area of Earth. Where exactly did the energy come from to create these massive storms? Was somebody playing with our laser satellite systems? At a point in which energy was extremely low, and in terms of the solar system, I really don't know. I cannot answer that question of where the energy came to drive this storm system. It certainly wasn't sunlight. The Earth was on the turn, and these storms were around midnight. And so Earth was diametrically opposed. The part of the Earth that was affected was diametrically opposed to the location of the sun. The moon was on the sunward side. It, like I say, August 6th was the new moon. Anyway, that brought up some other interesting topics that I'm going to do some further research on. And I'll just quickly mention this, that one woman was talking about 1871, some tornadoes, and fire coming out of the sky. These were not average tornadoes. This was reported in Wisconsin. And apparently Michigan, Wisconsin, and Chicago. Now, this is on the night of the Great Chicago Fire. Remember the song that Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked the lantern over? And that's what caused the Great Chicago Fire. But what apparently has happened is that there were fires, and of course that was back in the 1800s when communication was not good. But on that same night, Earth experienced in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Chicago, there were tornadoes that people saw coming out of the sky with whirlwinds of fire. Now remember the Moses event. He described very distinctly a whirlwind of fire that extended up into the sky, and that stood between them and Pharaoh's army for a night. It stayed there and blocked Pharaoh from coming and getting them, and then it was the next morning when the sea parted. What was the sea parting? Well, that was the gravitational wave of the passing comet Venus that separated the waters, that slew the waters out to one side. They were able to pass and get to the other side, and by the time Pharaoh's armies got in there, the water came rushing back and killed them all. And some people might think, well, no, that's just fairy tale. No, those events happened. They actually found the chariots. They found Pharaoh's chariots and his army in the Red Sea, they found them, and it was in a National Geographic special. I remember seeing those. I don't know if it was about 10 years ago or more, but those are real events. But they describe the pillar of fire. That's a big, there's two pillars of fire that the Israelites talk about that were following Moses. The one was the pillar of fire in the sky, which was the great comet, which illuminated their passage for 40 years. And the other one was the pillar of fire, the tornado-like pillar, that extended from the ground up to the sky. That was the electrical discharge from the comet. So the question comes back to this region in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Chicago, and they also talked about balls of fire raining out of the sky, and when they hit, they exploded and burned everything in the area. Well, that is reminiscent of tar. And burning, so pieces of comets, and we now know that comets are covered with a tar-like substance, many of them, a very black, extremely black tar-like substance. And that's the hydrocarbons that come in through the tail that are attracted into the comet nucleus area and then burnt onto the comet nucleus with the electron beam that's coming from the sunward side. That's the process that bakes this tar onto the surface, the hydrocarbons, bakes it onto the surface of the little comet nucleus. And so possibly what happened here is that a comet came by. There was a report that Biela's comet, one of the Biela comets, was in the region and it broke up. And there was an extension, like an arc between the two comets as they exchange tails. And this is interesting because what I was talking about in January 2014 with Comet Ison will be in a position in January 2014 where it's between us and Jupiter and up above a little bit. But this ability to swap tails is what I had been talking about, what I call the red hand of death, the sulfur dioxide coming in from Jupiter. So if we swap tails with Comet Ison, in other words, if Earth starts that discharge from Comet Ison and connects to Comet Ison, we could flip back and forth between having the tail in Comet Ison, having the tail extending all the way out to Jupiter. We could have some really interesting effects here. But that's an if. It's not a promise. It's an if. And that all depends on many factors that have to take place before January 2014, not the least of which this comet has to pass around the sun. And it's just a quick notice, by the way, NASAspace.com starting to do the old soft shoe, saying that this comet Ison is not panning out the way that NASA had originally predicted, the comet of the millennium or century, whatever, and that it would outshadow the great comet of 1680, and on and on and on. So the point is that they're trying to soft shoe the effect of Ison, and I don't know if that's misinformation. Clearly, Ison is not developing the way it should be if it's going to be the comet of the century. It's already beyond Jupiter. It already should be visible in the night sky with the naked eye. Remember the other comets that were visible far beyond Jupiter, far beyond Saturn. Some of the biggest comets ever seen in history were observed beyond Saturn, way, way out in the solar system. So, at any rate, we'll see. But getting back to the Wisconsin storm system, very, very interesting amount of electrical energy in that storm, and no apparent reason, no apparent electrical source of energy to cause those storms. At any rate, I'll keep researching that and bring you more information if I can find it. I'm also interested in these comets that they reported in the 1870s that were reported by people, and a lot of this information is simply squelched. That's the kind of thing that should be in history books. That's the kind of thing that should be in our national record. And here again, that brings up an interesting point. Were the people, the people who control the world, the bankers who by that time were already well entrenched in the United States, developing resources, that's right before the big boom of resources, the timber, the ore, and that was starting to build at that point, the investment bankers in the extremely wealthy families of the Northeast. All of that was developing around that time, 1870s, the post-Civil War era. And so were they already squelching information, burying information? They certainly probably, I would say they did not know what was going on, but they didn't want the public alarmed. So the story for the Chicago fire is Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked the lantern over and caused the Chicago fire, when in fact what the story is starting to look like is it was caused by electrical conditions from above. So very interesting. I'll keep an eye on that. I'm going to do more research on that, continue to report on that story. Okay, there has been a term developed called kill shot, and it's being used and used and used. People are predicting kill shots. People are saying that the sun's magnetic reversal will cause a kill shot. People are saying that Comet Ison will cause a kill shot. What's a kill shot? Well, it's a extreme electromagnetic pulse, basically a solar flare from the sun, that would knock out our electrical grid system on which we depend 100%. In our lifestyle today, 100% we depend on electricity. And I can tell you one person who doesn't, and that's me. I have reduced my lifestyle to what I call zero energy consumption, zero resource consumption, and zero water usage consumption. I return I take showers every day, but I return the water in good condition to the earth. I don't use harsh soaps. I don't put chemicals into the water that I use. I use a dry toilet where the solid waste composts and then is returned to the soil. But the problem is one person doing this doesn't solve the worldwide problem. The world has a great problem. But the point is that, getting back to this kill shot concept, that our electrical grid is vulnerable. And space scientists really don't know enough to predict these. And if they did, there's no mechanism in place to warn people to escape. There's another smoking... there's another gun waiting to go off here, and that is the eastern seaboard. We know that the Canary Islands, a big earthquake underwater in the Canary Islands would send a tsunami that in 6 hours would be washing over the entire eastern coast of the United States, possibly totally engulfing Florida, possibly washing inland as far as Pennsylvania. That's where the major coal fields of Pennsylvania came from tsunamis, massive tsunamis that came out of the Atlantic Ocean. So what I'm saying is there is nothing in place, first of all, to detect such a tsunami, and there's less in place to inform the public so they could get up and in orderly fashion leave. So it's just a disaster waiting to happen, and so it is with our electrical grid system. People are saying we should harden the grid or make it intelligent. Well, let me tell you something. When those something the size of a Carrington event starts happening, all of the local facilities are going to get French fried. Even though you might isolate one region from another, the local facilities are going to have major problems. We do not have the backup reserve transformers, diodes, wire, cabling, everything it would take to rebuild our electrical system. So how can you build an electrical system when you don't have the manufacturing base to rebuild the components? So it's just a disaster waiting to happen. But right now we are in the sun solar cycle. We're at the maximum peak of the current solar cycle, but the sun is the weakest it has been in probably 200 years. So we are at a low point. However, there's another factor, and that is that the world bankers want to use a false flag kill shot to shut down the world power supplies all over the world. They want to control the world, and this is their opportunity. It's just that Mother Nature is not cooperating. Years ago, NASA started pumping that, a kill shot could affect all of the grid systems on Earth, which it could. But the problem is that, as I say, Mother Nature is not cooperating with their program. And so this is not going to happen naturally. So a couple days ago, a couple guys, let me see if I can pull this up here, just a second, I got to pull this article up. Okay, here it is. This is from the Washington Examiner. And by the way, I was a guest last night. I got a call from Tom, the producer there, as many times happens. Called me a couple hours before the show last night, the Coast to Coast AM show with host George Norrie, and wanted me to come on and comment about solar conditions. So this is something that I have done countless times. And the topic was solar conditions. So I mentioned a number of these situations that people are saying that the solar magnetic reversal is going to be a major event. The reality is this happens every 11 years. And we don't all die when the sun reverses. Most people don't even know what's going on. But a number of days ago, and this included very top-level people, including CIA Director Jim Woolsey, talking about the imminent and destructive possibilities of an EMP, electromagnetic pulse from the sun. And also they're talking about Korea having this ability to send EMP pulses with a nuclear weapon. Well, over the South Pole where we have no radar. But more specifically, talking about the solar conditions, two scientists who are apparently advisors. These people seem to come out of nowhere. But it's a guy named Pry, there's a guy named Cooper, and then the former CIA director, James Woolsey, they said that this past week there was a kill shot flare that passed in front of Earth and that it crossed Earth's orbit. There was a lot of information on this, and it was passed around the Internet, a Carrington-class coronal mass ejection. It's just a matter of time until one of these hits Earth. Spaceweather.com comes along and says it didn't happen. Now, Spaceweather.com for months, possibly years, has been promoting this exaggerated and very much exaggerating the conditions of the sun. Every time there was the most minimal auroral event, it would be like front page news on spaceweather.com, and I reported this on my show. I said, what on earth is spaceweather.com promoting auroras that are occurring at the North Pole? Because they're always there. It's something that's going on every day. And so they've been promoting this this sun being much more active than what it really is. So oddly enough, spaceweather.com comes out and says, no, there was no EMP solar flare kill shot event. That didn't happen. There was no such thing. And the sun has been extremely mild recently. I just about fell off my chair. Here's spaceweather.com, who it appears was trying to promote this sun is going to blow us all to pieces concept, and then negating what comes out of apparently some kind of private scientific advisors to the president. What is the public supposed to think? And then, by the way, there's some woman that apparently is a verified employee of NASA running around saying that Planet X is going to do a close passage of Earth on August 9th. On the John Moore show yesterday morning, we talked about that. And I said, that sounds like NASA is doing a cry wolf event with an employee so that if any NASA employees come out in the future and say, hey, there's Planet X, that nobody will believe them. So it's getting pretty deep out here. You better have some pretty big high hip boots out there, because you know what? It's getting awful deep out here, folks. At any rate, I just wanted to mention that such strange reporting that these two guys, Pry and Cooper, along with former CIA director, saying that this kill shot event happened when it didn't. And I looked myself for any residue or any inkling of a kill shot flare coming out towards Earth or anywhere near us, and I haven't seen anything. So in that respect, I agree with spaceweather.com. So where is this reporting coming from? Who's doing this and why? But I feel it's all to desensitize the public, because my personal feeling is that around September, they're just going to take any solar flare that comes out, and, you know, very possibly we will have one, and to shut down the electric grid. Well, that's pretty convenient timing, because you got to remember that in a little over a month from now, Comet Ison will start to interact with the planet Mars. So keep posted on that. Remember that a little over a month from now, around mid-September, I would say actually a month from now, around September 10th, we should start watching for electrical interactions between Comet Ison and Mars. We'll be swinging around. That'll be in the early morning sky. And the good viewing will actually start occurring later in the month, when the moon will not be a factor. So I'll keep you posted on that. But at any rate, regarding Killshot, I don't see any conditions that would suggest that we could expect a Killshot from the sun. It could always happen. Predicting the future, I don't really predict the future. All I can tell you is that given the solar conditions we are currently seeing, the probability is extremely low. And if you see the, and actually I said before, that if you see the power grid go out in the United States and not other countries, that's going to be clear evidence that it's a man-made event, that the power switch was pulled. I've also made the point that if there is such an event, for example, a power outage as a result of a solar flare, it will be spotty. In other words, it's not going to take down the entire grid. But this is not going to be good enough for the what the bankers want to do. They want to shut everything down so they can basically take control, and then as the power comes back on, have a lot more control of the public. But what I said before is that if it happens in the United States and not in, say, Canada, Mexico, or other countries, you know that it was a planned man-made event. But now, indications are that they want to do this worldwide. They want to claim there's a flare, and they have people placed in all countries of the world ready to pull the electrical switch or cause damage so that the electrical grids all around the world are affected. Well, that's a big order. And so, this could be the event that the bankers are looking for to seriously take control. But at any rate, time will tell. And I would say if that's going to happen, the best time for them to do this, or the most likely time, let me put it that way, is this coming September. It also would shut down any ability of people to find out that they should be looking at Comet Ison. So basically, I'll just tell you right now, starting around mid-September, get up early morning sky, look to the east, you'll see the red planet Mars, very visible as the red planet, and then up above it will be Comet Ison. You should be able to see it with binoculars at first, but look for those electrical connections to Mars. If NASA is reporting real data, we'll see potentially as the comet passes Mars, gets close to Mars or passes Mars, we could potentially see that Mars in the tail region of the comet and atmospheric changes occurring to the planet Mars, possibly some surface, surface scarring due to electrical, surface scarring due to electrical activity between the comet and Mars. All of these things that we have not seen in thousands of years, the ancients actually reported about such events. And then Comet Ison starts moving into the solar system. It'll be a relatively quick trip to the sun of just in mid-November. So within that month and a half from 1st of October to, and by the way, the 1st of October is the closest approach of Comet Ison with Mars, and then it starts moving very rapidly into the inner solar system. It's going to have some very close nose-to-nose encounters with the planet Mercury. Then it swings around the sun, then it comes back out, and that's when the NASA claim that it would become the comet of the century. When no more than a year and a half ago, before Comet Lovejoy, NASA would have said, oh, this comet will disintegrate in the sun. Boy, does NASA roll? Did they? The creeping crud isn't creeping anymore. It's the running crud. It's the sprinting crud. They have to change so fast today, the left foot can't keep up with the right foot as far as the NASA image of what they want to present. But back to the kill shot concept. Right now, in fact, I saw some articles claiming that NASA is saying that the temperate climates will stay temperate and the tropical climates will lose their tropical, I don't know what they're supposed to change to, but they wouldn't be tropical anymore forever. And that's due to the solar magnetic reversal. Well, of course, all of this is garbage. It's just complete ridiculous it's not even tier two science. So I don't know where people are getting this. The end result is you are going to be barraged, absolutely barraged with misinformation. Let me quick change here. I want to get into this article about Obama because this is very important. This comes from this July, let me see if I can get that out. So it was June 25th, Obama addressed, he's a keynote speaker at the Keystone Pipeline Proposal meeting. And now, if you don't know what that is, the Keystone Pipeline is a pipeline that's supposed to go from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico, bringing tar sand base product, oil, crude oil, to the Gulf of Mexico to be processed. And now this is something that is really, well, there's a good and bad side to it. If we need the energy, that's great. But the problem is, once we start burning that immense deposit of fuel, tar oil that's in Canada, we're heading into a time of severe pollution. And but at any rate, I want to read some of the quotes here of Obama. These are very scary concepts that he's bringing. He said that climate change, now he starts out with climate change, see? And this is a climate change plan, but he's basing it on the Keystone XL pipeline. He starts out by saying that climate change is a challenge that does not pause for partisan gridlock. U.S. President Obama, I'm reading this from, by the way, EOS, it's the American Geophysical Union weekly newsletter. It says, U.S. President Obama took matters into his own hands and presented a broad-based climate action plan on June 25th. The plan, which relies on existing administrative authority and does not require congressional approval, includes three primary objectives: cutting carbon pollution in the United States, get this one, preparing the nation for the impacts of climate change. There is no such thing as man-made climate change. They are putting it into a policy, something that doesn't exist. And then he says, and leading international efforts to address climate change. So now they are, you see the globalism coming in here. Leading international efforts to address climate change. That's where the control mechanism comes in. And Obama says, the question is not whether we need to act. Get this, Obama says, 97% of scientists acknowledge that the planet is warming and that human activity is contributing to it. Where does this bozo get off with that? 97%? That's absurd. You have a small community of well-paid scientists in climate change, and since the government is pumping money into that, the tier two paid squirrel scientists are slobbering at the trough to get money, anything that'll pad their paychecks, and they'll scream climate change all the way to the bank. That's what's going on here. If the government says climate change, they'll jump up and down saying climate change because, hey, that's where the money is. Stanford University. Oh boy, they're all getting in line for the money. All in line for the money. That's what it's all about. And the bankers know that. So this is a way for the bankers to get international control. And let me read some of the other things I had circled here. And how we answer will have a profound impact on the world we leave behind, not just to you and your, but to your grandchildren. He goes, as president and father, as an American, I'm here to say that we need to act. I refuse to condemn your generation and future generations to a planet that's beyond fixing. He does make some good points, says 40% of U.S. carbon pollution comes from power plants. And nobody says, hey, why are we using all this energy? Why are we using immense amount of fuel every day? The freeways are filled with people driving to and from work, chasing that ever powerful dollar, and wasting all of this fuel just to get their bodies around. You're driving a 2,000 pound vehicle to get a 120 pound body around. Does not make sense, folks. And because of that, we live far away from where we work. So the whole structure is built on using resources. The amount of resources to build that car, that isn't even factored into the equation. And then you got to buy a new car every 6 years because you're burning it up going back and forth to work. So that metal goes back, it's put back in the junk metal pile and gets recycled into another one that you got to buy again. This is a plan that's on a crash course for disaster. But in the banker world, the banker economic model, vast amounts of resource usage are required. It can't work any other way. You can't have a sustainable society and have it compatible with the banker economic model of using resources and of everybody running out there having a 40-hour-a-week job. People have simply forgotten how to live. They don't know how to sit down and have lunch with their family or have breakfast and sit there and talk after breakfast. It doesn't happen. The kids are off in one direction. They got to go to school all week long so they'll be good, productive citizens someday and get that job. This is a cycle that, well, it really can't be broken. Then you have countries like China coming along trying to duplicate this and cutting down vast forests in Russia. It's a system that's on a train wreck. It's a train wreck that's already in progress. And resource usage is a fundamental flaw. We can't continue using resources. If we learn to live simply a simple lifestyle where we only used what we needed, we didn't need a brand new bigger TV every year, or a car, paying exorbitant amounts of interest on a house that's way overpriced. If people look at the amount of money that you make per year, say you make $60,000 to $100,000 a year, which would be upper middle class in this country. How much of that money do you really spend on you? When you buy broccoli in the store for $2 for a head of broccoli, really you should be paying about 20 cents. And that 20 cents should be going to the farmer and not to all the middlemen in the middle that truck that product from across the country. The whole situation and the amount of energy it takes to produce that and exorbitant energy prices, and then the amount of money it takes to ship it to the grocery store, energy usage is the key to all of this. So the lifestyle we've become to depend on, and back to the kill shot concept, if they pull down the power switch, everybody will be a slave overnight. Okay, well, I'm going to quick promote my water book, the new book on water. It goes into a lot of these details. You have to read this book. It's a must read. There's three ways to purchase it. You can buy the book for $13.95. It's a $16.95 book, but I just left the price at $13.95 on the webpage. It's an ebook. You can purchase all my books for $69, all of the ebooks, and you get the water book free, or you can buy $250 worth of water filter products on the web secure web ordering page, and you get all of the books free. And so at any rate, that's a pretty good deal. At any rate, go to the webpage jmccsci.com. I'm out of time. Jim McCanny here with my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.